Hello, everybody. Welcome to Shop Talk Show. We have two lovely sponsors for you. Environments for Humans promoting their Digital Business Summit. That's at digitalbizwithaz.com. That'll redirect you where you need to go. That's coming up August 20th, and it's a really, it's a good one. They're going to fill the room. It's only $99 to get in on that one. And Media Temple, the hosting company that hosts ShopTalkShow.com and CSSTricks.com and a ton of my other sites. They are a great hosting company. We'll tell you more about both of those two sponsors later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off. You are listening to the 126th episode of the Shop Talk Show, a podcast all about front-end web design and development, HTML, CSS, Jorba, Scrump, all those things. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer.
Hello, everybody. Gosh, it feels a little weird. It's been a while since we've done a, I don't know, I guess it doesn't matter to you because there's a show every single week. But, you know, Dave was just on vacation. I was just on a little trip, and I feel like we're back at the helm now.
I tried surfing. I did not do well. I like broke my arm. So everything's okay. I'll be okay.
But, what did you really break it?
I like hurt it really bad. And like now I can't pick up heavy things, which is like my only superpower. So anyway, Chris, who do we have in the studio?
Mr. today? Fabio. Oh, Carnero. Oh, just do it for me.
Man, you nailed it.
Carnero.
You nailed it. It's Carnero.
Oh, that's not bad. Carnero. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Just pretend the I is not in there.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, that is a, it's funky with that. Okay, I get it. Fabio is from MailChimp, right?
I am, yes.
Well, amongst.
I mean, I wasn't born at MailChimp.
No, I mean, I don't know.
I currently work. I am employed at MailChimp.
I just mention it right away because I think that's probably how both me and Dave know you, because we met you, because you spoke at conferences, because you talk about email, because you work at MailChimp. You know, there's like a chain of events that happen that I feel like we might as well start there.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So I guess the time when I met you, we were at Converge, maybe? Was that the one?
Yeah. I know I met you at Converge. I think maybe the one before last, but it was real quick, and it wasn't until like this year that we actually like.
Oh, right on.
Got the chat, everything.
Yeah. And I went to the talk, and so your current talk is, and maybe I don't know. Maybe you have a bunch of different ones, but this particular one was about responsive emails. So I'm sure that will come up in the toe, but we can a little bit. So designing an email is like one thing. You know, there's ways that you can do that with tables and stuff, and certainly people are acquainted with that listen to this show. And then, but responsive emails like a whole other ball game, right? It's like, gets a little funky with what email clients support and stuff, and how you approach a responsive website like bears almost no resemblance to how you would create a responsive email. Is that fair?
Yeah. It's just really strange, and I find it kind of a cool mash of very old and very new. So yeah, we're building, you know, structures using tables like out of the late 90s and stuff like that, but we're mashing it together with, you know, media queries and all these kind of more modern development and design standards to make the stuff work. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've always liked that you like how weird it is. You know, there's so many people out there that are just like, I don't know, so turned off by old technologies or whatever, and you're just like, all the rules are off. You know, like,
yeah,
whatever works for me.
I try to ask whenever I give my talks, you know, for a show of hands of how many people have, you know, designed or developed for email. And usually most of the room raises their hands. And then I follow up with, you know, and how many of you have liked it? And almost no one ever raises their hands, which I get. I mean, the learning curve is pretty steep, but like, once you once you get down to constraints of how to, you know, what you're working in, it, I love the technical challenge. Like, it's just you and like your wits and HTML and CSS, and that's it. You can't throw JavaScript at it. It's a neat box to work in.
I wonder if it, sometimes I'm scared of it for the reasons of, okay, I need this to work, and the places I need it to work aren't my familiar places. I can't just fire up Browser Stack or, but I might fire up a VM or something, because I need to send this email to myself in such a way that I can look at it in some obscure email client on some obscure platform or whatever. The cross browser, or I mean, I shouldn't even say cross browser, cross email client testing of it seems like an extraordinary challenge. Is it, have you overcame those? Like, there's no dev tools for Outlook, right? You kind of, it's like, look.
No, yeah. It's an interesting challenge because, you know, for browsers, when big things change, they now tend to be fairly well documented. And, you know, the people working on Firefox or Chrome, they have their blogs in which they might, you know, talk about in detail these technical changes that will sometimes change how a website renders and everything like that. But for email clients, there is none of that really. I mean, the Gmail crew has a development blog, but they don't actually, at least in the past, they haven't talked much about like, hey, we changed this thing and now, you know, your emails can render the property width and stuff like that.
I see. It's more like just like surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's even, that stuff happens even like within one company. Like Microsoft is kind of the one everybody hates as far as email clients, like Microsoft Outlook. There's Outlook for desktop and Outlook.com. And you think like, well, they're both coming from Microsoft. They should work kind of the same way. And they don't at all. And when changes to those things happen, you only really find out when your email explodes and an angry client comes, you know, running back telling you everything is broken. It's a lot of trial and error.
Who are the biggest offenders? Like, is there like, do you have your IE6 that you're just like, this guy is a scumbag and you have to make sure you test this one? Do you have, can you like give us those kind of clients?
Yeah. So I guess the biggest problem clients there are two of them, Microsoft Outlook, and that's Outlook 2007 and up. So 2007, 2010 and 2013 and, Gmail, surprisingly, because you'd think like, you know, hey, Google's this really cool forward-looking company that, you know, builds driverless cars and stuff.
but they can't put images in an email.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a crappy email client. Like, Gmail is the reason why, like, email designers have to inline all their CSS. And, you know, okay. There's no media.
So there's no, they don't even support kind of the, like, style block in the head thing.
Yeah, they strip all that stuff out.
So in a sense, that's overly surprising, yeah. Right? Because if let's say they allowed you to do a style block in the head, and those of us out here that are like, come on, Gmail, why don't you support standards, support CSS? It makes sense that they can't just support all CSS, because it's a website, and two, they're not iframes, right? When they show you their email, they're just in there, right? So you can't, what if you were to go star display none, the entire Gmail website would disappear, right? So they have to do something to limit what you're able to do inside of there. I'm not sure how they approach that.
Yeah. In theory, that totally makes sense, right? But if you look at other email clients, like, brace yourselves, AOL.com is awesome.
Jeez. Yeah. It's bizarre world.
Yeah. They have, you know, really up-to-date CSS support, media queries. They don't, I believe, work in AOL.com, but I could be wrong about that. I'm not looking at my notes right now. But what most email clients end up doing on as far as webmail goes, like they just append kind of their own class names to external classes being brought in and external IDs and styles being appended to elements to, I guess, get around that limitation, right? So like Outlook.com and Yahoo Mail and AOL, like they all do fine with, you know, CSS where it should, like in the head and all that kind of stuff. I'm not entirely sure why Gmail strips it. I mean, I'm sure they've got a reason, but
yeah, pretty weird.
Damned if I know what it is, because yeah, they don't document that stuff.
I wonder why they don't just rock the iframe. You know, like, are iframes just super slow or what? It seems like, okay, we'll throw out the iframe, do whatever you want, you know? Because if it's in there, then it, like, yeah, it's not dangerous.
Or inject, like, style scoped or something, you know?
I don't know. Probably is what they do in a weird way. I don't know. It's so that, but that's the world you live in, is that there's not a lot of information. You just got to test stuff forever. You just do whatever you got to do to make it work because it's such a hostile environment. And it's just, and then you have kind of a unique job at MailChimp, and that's, you know, because you like that and are good at that. And there isn't, like, I think last time I talked to you, there isn't like 50 of you at MailChimp, which you think that there might be, you know, you kind of have a small team of people that are in the trenches as you are.
That small team is just me, actually.
Yeah.
I'm like full time. I'm the only one that actually builds MailChimp's emails.
That's incredible.
it's interesting. I'm the only one. Yeah. For the past 5 years here at MailChimp, I've been the only one basically doing all the, you know, email development. We've got designers who will design a few of them here and there. I've done the rest. But yeah, it's just day in, day out what I do. And
I remember you saying at one point, it was funny to hiring somebody that you're like, you know, like I'm sure there's lots of developers or anybody that want to work at MailChimp because, you know, what a cool company, what a cool job. But when you're hiring to work with you, it's kind of like, don't like be a web developer who really secretly just wants to do that. You better want to work on email.
Yeah, that's been a challenge trying to find somebody because, yeah, a lot of people assume like, hey, it'll be a cool MailChimp gig with email on the side. I can do that. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to be eating, sleeping, and breathing this stuff, my friend.
Yeah.
That turns a lot of people off. It's a tough job, but I find it super rewarding. You know, it's just your brain and what you can figure out with the HTML, which to me is a super fun challenge.
And when you figure those problems out, you're helping so many people. I mean, a ton of people use MailChimp. So when you solve a little problem like that, it means that emails look better and are, you know, delivered better, communicate the messages better for all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, just look at how tough this stuff is for like web designers. Period. And like, imagine how insanely impossible it must be to people who don't have real strong skills in like HTML, CSS, and all that kind of stuff. Like, so I feel that what we try to do is figure out and solve all these problems so that people don't have to, because it's a colossal pain in the butt.
Well, so my question is, so we have like lots of questions about HTML email, but I want to hijack and ask one. What are like common design pitfalls you see designers doing? And then you're just like, sorry, brah, doesn't work. Or you know, what are the like common, you know, I don't know, faux pas around HTML email design that.
Yeah. So I guess I harp on the most and, still like the most grievous thing I see is that a lot of people think when they go into designing an email, they design it like a website, and you'll see, you know, lots of things like 10 item navigation bars and giant link lists and stuff like that, which is fine on a website, but you know, email is a very different medium and it requires different modes of thinking and different strategies, but not a lot of companies that I've seen really consider that. You still get lots of emails with like huge navigation bars and footers filled with links that you can't tap on a phone when mobile usage is skyrocketing. Like it's over 50% of all email opens happen on mobile now. And that's kind of nutty. And nobody's, rather not that nobody is moving forward there. A lot of people are, but you still see a lot of like really big companies kind of holding on to these design aspects and like outdated modes of thinking about email. That's like kind of the biggest challenge experientially for email that I see out there.
That's pretty wild. Mm-hmm. You'd think that the mobile first movement would have, if anything, happened first in email design, because that is such a common like activity to do on the phone.
Well, and it seems like it would infinitely make your life better because it's just the tube of content, right? You don't have any kind of floating you're trying to fake and tables and stuff like that. It's just a tube, basically.
Yeah, it forces you to think about your content a little bit. I wonder if there's like a mental, because you have to like, you just have to change your thinking a little bit when it comes to responsive stuff. We've talked about that and gone through that a bunch of times. So I wonder if MailChimp has a particular challenge in that you can't really build, as far as I know, you can't like build a new email from your phone, right? It's kind of like a desktop web app. So like, because you are sitting at your desk doing it, that you're in that mode.
Well, sure. The application itself scales down to tablet size, but on the phone it gets pretty difficult just because there's just so much that goes into it. I think it's part of the issue with email design, like being kind of stuck in the past, as far as like nav bars and all that kind of stuff goes. It is an outmoded, or rather an outdated mode of thinking where, it was this way for X number of years and people are just kind of still doing it because, honestly, like responsive web design as a practice is still kind of newish, I would argue. Mm-hmm. And then like when you try to bring that into email, like that's just another, there is responsive email design, but there are some, very major differences between responsive web design and responsive email design. So that's more to learn and more development time and all of that. So I think that can, sometimes be a big hurdle to these companies that, when an environment moves as fast as, just the web itself does, keeping up can be difficult.
Indeed. I thought when I was doing the HTML emails for CodePen, which gets sent out through, we can get into that in a minute. But I was like, one way to approach this is if you're not like in the mode of thinking about fluidness and shifting things around and whatever, you can still like use old school table design techniques or email design techniques using like HTML tables, but just go like with 320. And just be like, design the email how you want it, but just have it be real narrow.
Yeah, and that was kind of like the first little, attempt at mobile-friendly design. It's just like, forget about trying to use media queries. Like maybe you'd use a media query to bump up the text size on clients that support it. But, at the very least, you can do a 320 wide or 480 wide email with, a minimum font size of 17 or 18 pics, and it works pretty well. And then, that's kind of your jumping off point. Like if you're happy with that, then do it. There are a couple studies. There's this blog called Style Campaign that looked at this a while back, and, they built an email that was 320 wide, and they, kept an eye on the open numbers and the click numbers and things like that, the rates. And they said, it didn't change. It was something that was totally valid to do. So, that's kind of like the first very basic step. But at this point, like the practice of responsive email design has had enough people working in it that, there's really not too much of an excuse, I feel, to not do it. I think it's been elevated enough as a practice that it's, I wouldn't say simple to do, but definitely more possible now than it was, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Sure. Maybe we should get into some techniques of that in a minute here. But I think we should. First, I'm going to do a sponsor, and then maybe we can get at some questions that will lead us there, since this is primarily a Q&A show, if that works. Environments for Humans are promoting their Digital Biz Summit. So the URL there is digitalbizsummit.com. That'll redirect you to where you need to go. That is coming up very soon here. It is coming up August 20th. It is an online conference, meaning you can attend it from anywhere in the world that you have a, you know, a web browser and an internet connection. So no booking flights and hotel rooms or anything. You can attend it for anywhere, but it is live. You know, you log in and watch. And this is all about, you know, freelancing and running a small business. And like, how is that done? Let's talk about the things that make this industry tick, from, you know, pricing and, you know, just all and hiring and all those kind of things that are business related. So Digital Biz Summit, it's $99. So come on down. You know, it's for a conference of this quality and scope, that's pretty good. Save $10 with coupon code Shop Talk Show. Dan Mall's going to be speaking. I just saw Dan at AEA in DC, and he gave this incredible talk. I love Dan Mall. You should listen to the things that he says. Emily Lewis is going to be there talking about hiring. Carl Smith. Rob Haar is going to talk about digital business and cash flow, which is pretty interesting, from Sparkbox. Lots of good business stuff. So check that out at digitalbizsummit.com, August 20th. Let's do a question here from Jeremy Lawson. Jeremy writes in, I am working on building responsive e-blasts, our favorite word around here. My question is twofold. One, are there any tools or frameworks that make this easier for me? I guess we'll just softball this over to you, Fabio. maybe a foundation or Bootstrap, but I'm sure we could also say, hey, there's some web apps that do this too. Second, why is coding these so painful? Why do we still have to code like it's 1999? Why isn't coding standards and the process reflected in email programs as well as it is in browsers? So how can we help Jeremy do this better?
Okay, Jeremy. As far as frameworks go, there are a few. There are actually a lot of really talented folks out there building these things. I'll plug mine first because it's me. Templates.mailchimp.com is kind of, I refer to it as like my brain on the internet. It's everything I know about email design and development. There's like a resources section with some email templates that we host on GitHub that, you know, are Creative Commons. You can use them for whatever you want. There's this guy, his name is Brian Graves. He does this great responsive email patterns. I believe it's just responsiveemailpatterns.com, where he's got these code snippets that you can pull and put together in an email. There's Ink from Zurb. Those are, you know, I guess they've got like a few different email templates that you can, you know, pull in and do whatever you need to do. And like all, there's a HTML email boilerplate. There's a lot of these things.
Wow.
Litmus.com. So Litmus, you know, is an email analytics company, but they've got some templates up there now. They're fairly simple to find nowadays.
Wow. That was a link dump. I was having trouble keeping up.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll put all those in the show notes, everybody. So you can just click, click, click to them. I did not know that there was so many
and
good
more
ones.
Too.
Yeah. We'll say and more too with an exclamation point.
And more. Yeah. And then the second part, like, why is it so difficult? It's difficult for a few reasons, I think. So the major reason is, back in 2007, Microsoft, with their new version of Outlook, for Outlook 2007, they switched away from using IE6 as the rendering engine for the program, you know, to render emails, to the Word engine. Like, and yeah, you heard that right. It's they switched from a dedicated HTML rendering engine to one that's used for creating Word documents.
So Microsoft Word has some kind of like HTML parsing thing built into it, which who knew what it does?
Yeah, and it's not great. You know, it works awesome if you're building emails in Outlook and like using, you know, Microsoft Word clip art and stuff like that to send in your company. It looks fine. But anything coming in is going to have to kind of conform to this, you know, ad hoc engine they've got. And it doesn't support a whole lot of like really common stuff. Like the width attribute is...
That's a wild one.
Exotic. Width.
Yeah.
And like height doesn't work and, you know, just things like that. And at least for their part, they've documented this kind of stuff. And I can provide that link later. It's like on the Microsoft Developers Network kind of thing. And it shows you everything that works and even more things that don't work. So that's part of it. You know, just this lack of standards. And these companies have taken it upon themselves to decide what gets supported on what element, you know, at what time. And that makes it really difficult. And, you know, for a little while now, there hasn't been any talk of email standards. There was kind of, I call it a false start by the W3C a few years ago. But the, you know, the nice part is that they're actually starting to talk about that again. So hopefully it will get easier. I'd say don't hold your breath, because it really would take Microsoft changing the engine, you know, for their entire Microsoft suite, like the Office suite. And that's, I don't feel that that's going to happen. So I think emails are going to be difficult to deal with for the foreseeable future, barring, you know, some miracle. Although, you know, Nadella's been pretty awesome coming into Microsoft, so maybe he'll swoop in and save the day.
That's pretty wild. So I wonder what a standards body would look like at all. I mean, I'm sure there's been plenty of talk about this, but I'm just catching up. I didn't know that was a thing at all. But the underlying technology that makes emails is still HTML and CSS. So that those are standardized. Yeah. So I wonder what email standards group would do. Or are they discussing like an entire new language to...
Yeah, so the W3C has set up like an open group to talk about this kind of stuff, and there have been people that, you know, have pushed for a dedicated email language. I think, you know, personally, that's the entirely wrong way to go. HTML and CSS work pretty well, and it's really more a matter of getting email client builders to, you know, fix their stuff, which is tough, right? Like, how do you convince Microsoft to go in and strip out everything that makes the Office suite the Office suite and then replace it with something that works just because, you know, just for web designers?
That's maybe. I mean, they that's right? kind of what they did, though. Like, but when like IE10 was dropping, it was kind of like, look, we are really dedicated to standards. Look at all these, like, they were like hiring designers to make splash websites that showcase how well they embrace standards and stuff. That was their marketing message for IE, was look how well we support standards. And that, you know, maybe that can manifest itself with email as well. Although that's, who knows?
It would take a lot of, I think, you know, because the browsers all have such high visibility at this point, right? You had, you know, IE was pretty much like the thing everybody used. And, you know, maybe some people use Opera and Netscape Navigator and stuff. But then you have like, you know, Firefox come into the scene and really start shaking things up. And then, you know, Google comes in with Chrome. There, that kind of stuff, that pressure, like that market pressure, doesn't really happen in email. So, yeah, you know, it could be that that would be a good way to do it. There was kind of a movement started around the time, you know, Outlook 2007 came out, called Fix Outlook. All the, you know, the email service providers and email developers tried really hard to pressure Microsoft to change back to IE6. And it petered out. It didn't go anywhere. So it's, yeah, it's kind of a problematic area and problem to solve. We'll see where it goes.
We've talked about...
Call me a pessimist.
We recently had on Rob Dodson, and we were talking about web components, and that's like a more complicated, totally different kind of thing. But one of the deals with web components is that they provide this kind of like isolation from what's around it on a page, a little bit like an iframe does, but it's not an iframe. And a little bit like the the scoped attribute works on style a little bit too. I wonder if that's like, maybe that's what could happen to HTMLs. Maybe there's like an email tag or something. And once it says email, it's a little bit like an iframer. It provides some kind of artificial boundary. So it's like whatever happens in here, but it's not really an iframe. It's just like a chunk of a document that we want to kind of sandbox. I wonder if that kind of thing could help email.
That's what I'm thinking, like iframe or even like architecture and operating systems has changed. Like you have access to like the web view in Android or something like that that renders web pages, but then it would have JavaScript. So maybe it needs to be something different. But I'm just like...
Yeah, we're just spitballing I here. I'm sure that this stuff has been thought about by
well, yeah,
been better than some radio
some security
hosts.
Stuff.
What if we changed the way that we use money in America?
Yeah. Good job.
We'll figure it out.
We're like the Wolf Blitzer of web design. But I wonder if it's getting better. I was just going to say, this is totally kind of off topic, but did you guys see that Microsoft has a GitHub account now? And but the bio on Microsoft's GitHub reads like an apology. It says Microsoft has changed as a company and is becoming more open in the way that we collaborate with others. So it's kind of like a...
I know, I saw that going around, but I feel like they've been doing that a lot. You know, like that's not the first time that they've put out that message. You know, they have little splash pages apologizing for old IE and stuff, and we want it to die as much as you do and stuff. And I don't think this is the first time we've heard pseudo apologies from Microsoft. It's just part of the new Microsoft.
Well, also what's funny is Microsoft's like a company of how many thousands of people, like hundreds of thousands,
one
or
person
whatever,
wrote that.
11 people on the GitHub. Yeah. come on, guys.
Yeah. It's got to be tough.
I know.
At least it comes across as honest and true, you know? So that's cool. At least it wasn't disingenuous.
Yeah. I think for their part, they're trying. I mean, you know, it's... I feel good about, like, their new CEO and their this kind of... You know, he just announced that they're combining... You know, all the Windows OSs into a singular OS.
Oh. Wait, no more Office Business or Ultimate XP or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Like for every platform, even like I assume mobile, they're just kind of crushing it all into one Uber Windows.
Could work. I guess.
The guy who thought of that is just like, my idea! But my
we'll
features!
See where it goes.
Yeah.
I mean, Microsoft's easy to hate, but I got to give them credit for trying.
Yeah. They're not even fun to hate anymore.
No, it's too easy, right? Like,
I think
you're punching down.
Around.
But it's not. You still like, I can't. Like today, I published a blog post on CSS Tricks about the new Tower, which is like a Git client for Mac. And like the first comment is like, but what about Windows? You know, like that's still around, you know, like as much as like they're irrelevant, they're not irrelevant. And there's tons of people on Windows, as you know, I'm sure.
This is something I've been wondering. Are we becoming a mono culture? Are we becoming a OS monoculture?
Because developer-y people use Macs pretty exclusively. But
yeah, and iOS. And
I don't know. I mean, the world still runs on Windows, you know?
Yeah.
You could argue that we've been a mono OS culture because of that, but who knows? I mean, I think you're going to start seeing kind of like a rebalancing, right? Where obviously Apple's kind of scrambling and getting more and more market share and it's causing Windows to panic a little bit, or Microsoft to panic a little bit.
To make big changes and stuff.
Yeah.
I would like to get a Windows environment that I could work in, but I'm so highly tooled into, Ruby and Node and, a Unix-y POSIX, I think it's called, kind of workstation, but I don't know. I'd like to be able to switch on the fly.
At this point, really, all I use a Windows machine for is gaming, and that's about it.
Wow, that's cool.
I mean, I started with Windows.
Yeah. Well, let me do a sponsor real quick. We have the Media Temple is hosting us. They've hosted before. They are awesome to me because they've hosted pretty much every website I've ever done since I've been a wee little boy designer, and I've stuck with them for all that time because they do a good job. I feel like in getting better all the time. I feel like there was a moment there where they're like, but GoDaddy bought them, and I'm like, and then they're like, nothing's gonna change, and everybody's like, we'll see, and now a bunch of time has passed and nothing's changed, and in fact they've gotten better. I think. In fact, this isn't in our little notes here, but they just rolled out a redesigned the internal part of their site. So a little bit back, they redesigned the kind of the marketing side, the front end of their sites, and it looked really good and modular. And they wrote about it for CSS Tricks, with really smart people worked on it. It's a beautiful looking site. Now that look has made its way all across the inside of Media Temple site too. So. It's responsive on the guts of it. So when you go manage your sites and stuff, all that's responsive in there now too, which is always a particularly difficult task, you know? I feel like in the early days of responsive design, it was like, yeah, you designers, you can redesign your blog responsively, but try doing a real web application, you know? And now there's more and more sites that are like, no, this is a real web application and it's responsive. So enjoy. Anyway, that was a total aside. Media Temple is a hosting company, managed hosting too. So they have, 24/7 live support. You can call them, live chat with them, phone lines up. That's kind of my favorite part about Media Temple is whenever I have a problem, they are just on the case, which is cool. They have the grid thing where it's that's their least expensive hosting. That's kind of auto scales and stuff. And you get 100 websites on it and stuff. And then it kind of goes up from there, getting you, virtual machines and stuff. That's what, CSS Tricks is on the DV plan, which is kind of the mid-tier thing, which also can scale up. Anyway, they have one-click install WordPress is cool. Anyway, if you want to check out Media Temple for your hosting, which I recommend that you do, Shop Talk is the discount code. 20% off, 25% off your first month, so save a few bucks that way. Put a link in the show notes. Anyway, thanks Media Temple for sponsoring and doing a good job with your hosting. Keep it up. You got another question for us, Dave?
Yeah, let's go. Is this number two? No. Yeah, number two. Yes. Okay, here we go. Phil Smith writes in, hey there, I've been building emails for clients in the UK for a few years. Last year, I discovered Grunt, and it's totally transformed my workflow. Example, inlining CSS. Can't help thinking there might be even more stuff I could be doing, though. Can you describe your workflow, Fabio, for marking up testing in HTML email?
Yeah, so my workflow is actually still kind of old school. I don't do a whole lot of automation. Using, Grunt and kind of other, even kind of trying to wrap in frameworks for CSS, Sass or Less or anything. I don't do. I do a lot of stuff by hand, mostly because it's kind of what I'm used to, and I haven't had much time to pick up, kind of a new workflow. But there are people out there who are doing awesome stuff with that kind of thing. Dan Denny of Code School, I believe a quick Google search will find something. He just wrote about kind of using frameworks to, automate the building of HTML email. But yeah, my workflow, pretty simple. I tend to work in, and people have opinions about this code editor, but I love Dreamweaver. I've always, it's kind of what I started using when I became a web designer. And for me, no other tool has a faster code completion. And so that I use a lot as I go along and build these things by hand. But the nice part about Dreamweaver is that, you know, it's got this kind of like design view that you can look at your email in. And the design view is so bad that it actually makes a pretty good facsimile of an email client.
Okay.
So you can see, you know, kind of what breaks in there is probably what's going to break in an email client at some point. And so I just kind of developed that way. And then, you know, the rest of kind of my workflow. So I'm, you know, a lot of what I do just goes straight into kind of the back end of MailChimp. And, yeah, you know, we've got directories with all these emails, but like, I actually keep track of the number. To date, I've built 983 emails all by hand.
Wow.
I just haven't found that like using kind of like a framework to automate this thing is faster than what I can do.
I wonder if it makes it, yeah, it makes, I wonder if it's because you need to be very, very in tune with what the final result of the, you know, the email is, because any, you know, I'm sure any tiny little differences or whatever, tiny little unexpected things can cause problems in emails. You know, that's your job, is to know the root level stuff in a way.
Yeah. And, you know, that's not to say that automating the stuff is bad, but, you know, this is just what works best for me. And I think that's, I guess it's kind of a tangent and side discussion on the use of frameworks and automation, where, like, you know, a lot of people say like, oh, you should definitely use, you know, Bootstrap or, you know, all these other frameworks to build your thing. Like, yeah, if, you know, all of that just works if that's what you need it for, but you don't always need to use a framework. Sometimes it's just best to build things by hand. I think you learn more that way, and you kind of get into the intricacies of, you know, especially in email design where so much can go wrong. It's a faster way to learn kind of the ins and outs. Mm-hmm.
Phil, I wonder if you'd be interested in we kind of have a little bit of a interesting workflow sending marketing email from CodePen. I just thought, okay, we built this tool that allows you to write in HTML and CSS and like render the output of it. Like, wouldn't it be nice if we could create our emails in that and then just send them out? Which, of course, it is. So we built that. Which is kind of cool. And what the result of that means that we can write in whatever languages we want to, meaning preprocessors for stuff. So if you like to write in Jade or whatever, we can do that. I generally just write in HTML, but then I use Sass to style the whole email and just get it looking how I want to look it. I start with some kind of HTML boilerplate-y looking stuff in there so that the it's nested in tables how it needs to be or whatever. And then there's, like you said, you use Grunt, and you must have found some Grunt task that inlines the styles for things, which means like take this chunk of CSS and match it to all the elements and then literally put style attributes on all the elements. That's the perfect kind of thing for Grunt to do. We found some gem that can do it too or whatever. So that's what we built. So I can write in Sass and then by the time then just run it through this gem thing and it just smurfs all the styles onto the thing. And then we send it to Mandrill. So we use Mandrill to send out our marketing emails. And Mandrill has like a little API thing that like tests it too. And you get like an API response that's like, I think that's Mandrill that does it. Maybe that's another gem, but I think it's Mandrill that says, like, here's some things that might be problems with that email. They're just warnings, but you might want to check it out. And we built a little system that's like, first, which pen is it that has the email? Then it inlines the styles. Then it checks the stuff. And then if everything is good to go, we send it out. So that's like our little workflow, and allows me to write emails in such a way that I'm more comfortable doing it, I guess, but allows me to use modern fancy tools. So I'm the other end of that spectrum, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I work very differently in that, like, the emails I build are never finished because that's up to our users to go in and, you know,
yeah, I suppose that's right.
Code blocks and all that.
You're making little half, little template kind of things that is then filled with user generated content.
Yeah, I get everybody about three quarters of the way, and then I step back.
Yeah, cool. All right, what else should we do here?
All right, next question. Oh, we got a question from Beatrice Lejeune for Fabio. If you are an active member in a forum, how would you describe the notification preferences of your dreams? This one's a pretty
personal.
It's
like a poem, kind of. I was surprised when I came in. I mean, yeah. I like the question, but it's so kind of theoretical. So you're a member of a forums. Let's say you're like really into surfing and you joined some surfing forums.
Which, very yeah. timely, Chris, because I surf now. Oh, yeah.
Let's say you wanted to get better at surfing and not hurt your arm.
Yeah, let's say you join the forum. You want to pop up. You're asking, hey, I want to pop up. I posted a new message, and I'm going to get emails back for replies telling me how to pop up. What does that look like, Fabio? Or what does it do? Could you describe the notification preference of your dreams?
Oh, man. Okay. I can't say I've ever been asked this question, but okay, let's go from like a user experience perspective, right? So like on a forum, you know, maybe not everybody has something that's necessarily interesting to say. And let's say you've been on this forum for a little while and you know, wouldn't it be cool to like be able to subscribe to a person and whenever they chime in on your little thread, maybe you get an email that time, or you could maybe in the preferences pane set up kind of a digest that you get, you know, maybe every couple of days, because who has the time to go to a forum every day? I'm busy playing video games every day. You know, so then maybe that's another aspect of it. I think this kind of gets in the idea of like content curation. Like you want specific things that, you know, are more relevant to you and, you know, your interests. So why not have kind of a notification system that lets you do this and lets you set up an email to only bring you stuff that you find interesting and relevant from the people you want to
hear. So that's a reaction to...
I guess that's my dream.
That's a reaction to like the assuming that a bad way to handle notifications is that you just get in, you're just constantly inundated with emails. You post a thread about how to pop up, somebody leaves an update to that thread, and you get an email about that. And then somebody else posts, and you get an email about that. And somebody else posts, and you get an email about that. And you're like, oh my God, could that be a digest instead? Or maybe like, you know, only one of three of those are good. So maybe like if those users were rated somehow, and they were rated by other users of that forum as being someone who leaves good responses, that you would only get an email from someone with like four or more stars or something like that. Or you literally, you know, I would want a response from Dave because he's my friend. I would get an email response from him, but not just any old bloke on this off the street who replies. It's a pretty clever idea.
Yeah.
Pretty clever.
I also think of like things like Reddit or something where it's such a large community, you could get messages in the thousands, mm-hmm. right? Like if you're getting notified. I'm on Discus for my comments, and that's sort of a forum, right?
Yeah, they definitely do the digest thing.
They do the digest thing, but I get quite a few like singles and it's, I have to like reply with an action, you know, I'd have to either go to my preferences to delete it or like reply with the word delete. I'd love a delete button if it's really not helpful. That's just stuff.
It's a balance though, right? Cause I'm sure we could think of like 20 ideas of like interesting ways that you could manipulate how you're notified when things happen on a forum. But then like, do you really want 20 different UI controls inside of a forum? You know, like there's definitely a point in which that's just too much and people won't even find them or use them or feel overwhelmed by them too. So it's kind of one of those things where it's got to just do some smart stuff just kind of automatically. Yeah. Anyway, interesting question, Beatrice. I don't know if we're the forum's masters around here, but it's certainly an interesting thing to talk about. Ryan Boone writes in, what's the easiest way of handling data without a database? Jason? I'm working on a personal to-do app that sends out an HTML email every morning to update my team on the status of my current jobs. And I'd like something easier than manually editing an HTML file to update. I eventually want to build a GUI for it and push it out to others in my department. So Ryan, every day, wants to send out an HTML email to his team about status stuff, but wants to, he just needs a good workflow for that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would depend how you're sending the email, right? Like, you could, I suppose, just set up an account with, like, an ESP, perhaps like MailChimp, that has an API that you can tap into and then go about it that way, where you build the email once and then the content you kind of, you know, inject using the API in whichever kind of little back end you've got. Mm-hmm.
I would think that the RSS to email would be a decent solution for them.
That would
just
be good,
then you
too,
can just any CMS that you want in the world, or even perhaps one of your own making, just needs to be responsible for barfing out RSS, and then the ESP can suck up that RSS and send it.
Dang it, Chris, with your better suggestion. Your better, simpler suggestion.
But that doesn't help you. But you know, with that CMS, you'd want a database probably. And Ryan is specifically asking.
That's true.
The very first sentence was, "How do you do it without a database?" But Dave, can Jekyll barf out RSS? It can it?
Heck yeah! You just write an atom.xml and blop bleep blurp. You need like some XML. Foo, but it's easy. You just loop through the posts and barf out.
Yeah.
Posts.
So then you have a thing that can produce RSS that is whatever, doesn't have a database. But then it's kind of like you're opening a markdown file, writing this thing, and then it goes through all these steps to turn into an HTML that gets sent. It seems like a lot of steps in between. It's like, why don't you just write the email? You know,
you compile, then deploy, and then send it up.
So, Ryan, definitely don't count out just using something like MailChimp. You can just make a template, open up MailChimp, go into that template, and type in what you want to send to your people and hit send. You know, like that's a possibility too, is to not have some middleman thing that has to do all this stuff, but just use the app. Especially because it's free, isn't it? Isn't MailChimp free to some ridiculous number of subscribers?
Yeah. I mean, a free account's definitely easy to pick up and use.
You could also make a page on your server or what, like your internal tool that whatever sucks all the data into an email, like a template, and then just you click a button and send a mandrel. It'd be like some effort, but if it's bothering you that much and you need it, you could do it.
Plenty of options there. Maybe we'll do one more here and then call it, hey?
Yeah, we have, let's see, here we go. Here we go. We have a message. I'm losing it. Christian Dilger writes in a registration form, new clients are asked to put in their email address and password they want to use later on. The password has to be put in twice as usual in order to avoid some misspelling. But what about email? Of course you can check if the syntax is right, but should you double opt in with an activation email in order to verify the identity as a real person? But what if the client misspelled his or her email address and the activation mail could not be transmitted to the client's inbox? Maybe the client will wait for an activation mail but never receive one, and maybe not try
that's
it
probably
once again,
good
ever.
There goes on.
So there's like the double password, you know, confirmation and the double email. Is that a good practice or a bad practice? I've seen it before, but I don't know. What do you think, Fabio?
I guess speaking from the, hey, it's kind of already established point of view, like, yeah, it works. I mean, would there be a better way, like a nicer, friendlier way to do that? I mean, you could just do an inline syntax checking on the email instead. I mean, how often do you really like I guess, mistype your email. That's kind of beyond me, I suppose. But
well, what's the problem if you don't? I mean, if you actually do mistype your email and you don't get an activation email, you might just be like, shoot, that was weird. Maybe I'll try it again. Oh, I type it correctly. It'll be like, I don't see an account under that. You'd be like, oh, I must have misspelled it. And then you sign up again and it works because you're being more careful the second time or whatever. I don't think the repercussions for misspelling your email is that big. But at the same token, misspelling your password isn't that big of a deal either, really, if you you're signing up for a service and you get your email correct but your password wrong, like let's say they only ask for it once, then you go to log in and it doesn't like your password, you'd be like, that's weird. Then you just reset your password, and assuming your email is right, they have a password reset feature. And it is a little weird that they don't ask for your email twice generally, but they do ask for your password twice. I mean, we even do that on CodePen. It's such a established thing, we probably never even thought about it, you know.
Yeah, I think the password makes sense, right? Because that's an obfuscated field. Like, it has dots instead of words, right? For security, intense security. But if you required the email twice, you'd basically be penalizing the people who know how to type their email and confirm that that was their email address.
Or use copy like, and paste.
You're penalizing them. And that's most people, I would hope. Yeah. But
and you have to look to, like, is not receiving this activation email like the barrier between, let's say, opening your account? Like, if that's the case, like, if you can't start using your X account until you click the little button that says let's go in the email, then yeah, maybe it's worth at that point making sure that the email is entered twice. But if it's just an email that says like, hey, welcome to the thing, you know, here's just your username, just so you remember it, and, you know, see you later. And you can log into the site with no problem, then that'd be okay, I think, you know.
That's usually what happens to me, right? I think I get a session, like they still put me into the session, and they just wait to verify the email.
That's almost worse, though, because then it's like you're going in there and you're doing work, but it might, your email might be wrong and you might never know it. I guess that's a little weird. Sure. But I guess maybe that's why you do the email verification thing. Like it's one thing is for security. Like we need to get this going on CodePen soon, the email verification thing, because it for one reason we might just like, you know, you can use the app and do everything you want to do, except for we might not make your pens like totally public until you verify your email address, just because that, you know, spammers generally, it's just one extra step that a spammer might not take. You know, it's kind of a good idea. But then, like, you sign up with the wrong email address, you're using the app and you think everything is fine. That might be weird if you like don't get notifications and it's harder to log in the second time and stuff. But the email activation thing would remind you, you know, like, shoot, I'm not activated yet. Let me click the button. Oh, the email keeps not coming up. I wonder why. Oh, it's because it's misspelled. It gives you a chance to fix the mistake after sign up. I don't know, there's a lot to think about here. I've seen some little add-ons that for some reason, like if you type like MGAIL, like you like dyslexia the GM in Gmail or something, it's like, hey, you did you mean Gmail? You know, there's like little UI things I've seen that do that to try to ward away problems with typing in email addresses. I once made a little demo that once you type the at symbol, it gives you a little drop down for the most common email providers, just A, to possibly make that a little easier to enter, and B, to prevent typos.
Like Gmail.
Yeah, right. That one's even worse, you know.
And that kind of checking at least is kind of, it's fairly simple to do, like in line on the form. So it could be that that's the best solution.
It is worth thinking about a little bit, though. I like the idea, Christian, that you're questioning best practices, you know, because they exist sometimes for a reason, and sometimes they're like, oh yeah, we forgot to think about this for 6 years, you know.
Yeah, but this is also a good reminder why you should never send a password in an email, because if they did type it wrong and I sent my password 123 out to a million people, or like somebody who doesn't, maybe I sent it to a mailing list by accident or something.
Oh. Yeah, that would be bad.
There you go. That's why you never send an email and or with the password in it. Plain text.
Good reminder. All right. What do you got for wrap-up materials?
Well, Fabio, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. And we never got to talk about the time we had beers with the ghost of C.S. Lewis and
that was a good time.
J.R.R. Tolkien. Wow. Yeah. No, well, one day we'll reminisce. We'll go back to Oxford. But thank you for coming on the show. Before you go, if for people who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they follow you, give you money? And then what's like the one big thing that you would like to plug? What's the big thing?
Ooh, the big thing. Well, so people can follow me. I guess the best way to get a hold of me is Twitter. So I'm at FL Carnero. Otherwise, they could go to flcarnero.com or send an email to sayhey@flcarnero.com. I mean, I'm on the internet. There are ways. And the big thing I'd like to plug, I suppose, I guess this growing email community. I'm going to be like not selfish and plug my own thing. I'm going to plug a variety of things. So Litmus has this growing email development community. It's just litmus.com/community, I imagine. You could go in and sign up. It's forums. All of us email geeks hang out there, so you can ask questions about your code or about practices and stuff. There's templates.mailchimp.com. I mentioned that earlier. That is always kind of growing and changing, and I'm always adding to it. And if you're really into email, I know it's sold out this year, but Litmus also does this email design conference in Boston. It's next month. Maybe follow tweets from there. You'll pick up some cool stuff. And for the other stuff, just find me on Twitter. I'm always happy to talk and talk about email and help people through problems, all that kind of stuff.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you very much. And thank you, everyone, for coming out into the chat room. Be sure to check out our show notes for this episode with all those email template links. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Be sure to rate us up in your iPod catcher of choice. And, follow us on Twitter @ShopTalkShow. Chris, you got anything for us?
ShopTalkShow.com.